and welcome to Dharma Bums, a weekly podcast about Zen Buddhism geared toward the disaffected youth of my generation, Gen Z. I'm your host, Chayla Wetzel. On today's show, I have a very special guest calling in, John Colwaite. John is the abbot of the Cambridge Zen Center, which is a residential Zen center here in Massachusetts. I got involved with the CZC back in September, and I've been going to the meetings of their Young Zen group every Sunday. The Young Zen group is a place for young people to come together to meditate and talk and just like hang out and drink tea together. It's very chill. I've always been someone who's been kind of like averse to spirituality and religion, but as I've gotten a little bit older, I'm starting to see the draw, especially from the community aspect. I think it's really important to have some sort of greater connection with the world in which we exist rather than just like living for ourselves. And Buddhism and meditation have really helped me with that. Talking with John was really enlightening for me because he reinforced the idea that this sort of like discontentment with the prescribed way of life here in the United States isn't really all that fulfilling for everyone. In our conversation, he told me a bit about how he got involved with Buddhism and gave some history about the practice in general, which is great because like, hey, aren't we all here to learn? But before we start, let's get into some specifics. So this podcast is called Dharma Bums. What does that mean? What does the word Dharma mean? Well, basically, Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha. In a more prescriptive way, it's, quote unquote, the nature of reality regarded as a universal truth taught by the Buddha, as quoted from Wikipedia. And Dharma Bums is the title of a Jack Kerouac novel in which some young people set out on a path to find enlightenment, which I think is really what like we're all here for at the end of the day. Okay, with that out of the way, let's get into the conversation. Hi, John. Thanks for being here with us today. Do you want to introduce yourself?
So my name is John Colwaite. I am the abbot of the Cambridge Zen Center, which in typical religious lore, the abbot is like the Zen master or, you know, in other faiths, an accomplished adept at the religion.
Lovely. So I want to know, like, how did you like find this role and kind of more broadly what like brought you into Buddhism initially and like your kind of personal journey and how you ended up here?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm a blabbermouth, so be ready.
Awesome.
Cut me off at any time. I actually became interested in Buddhism very young, probably when I was probably your age, when I was 19. I was an undergrad. I was an English major. And I had a lot of big questions about life, which proceeded from a very strange experience I had when I was 16. I had this very powerful dream that haunted me for a long time. And the dream was... this is a dream, so, you know, bear with it. It doesn't make logical sense, but
nothing does.
nothing does. So in the dream, I was an old man, in the hospital with like tubes hooked up to me and beepers going off and wires. And basically the scene was, I'm going to die soon. And at that time in life, I had been given a project in the school. I think it was in my English class too, you know, research a career and, you know, talk about how you would want to become that career, what you need to do to actualize that career. And that bothered me very much because I had no idea. I had no clue. I was like, what is that? You know, I grew up in a suburban setting and everyone was in the pipeline, you know, go to a good college, get a good job, get a big house, get two cars, have kids, travel in the Caribbean, and everything is fine. I just didn't buy that somehow. And maybe that affected the dream. So the dream was me watching versions of myself coming into the room, almost me seeing myself as young and watching the possibilities of all the things I could be present themselves to my old man self about to die. So a version of me coming in saying, hey, I became a lawyer and I tried all these wonderful cases and da 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 da. And the old man saying to me, no, that won't do it. That won't make you happy. Oh, then I became a world famous author and I wrote the great American novel and won the Pulitzer Prize. But no, that won't make you happy. I'm a football star. I got the Lombardi Trophy. No, that won't make you happy. Version after version after version of identity after identity that I was thinking or contemplating or fantasizing I could possibly become was told to me, no, that won't do it. But they never answered the question, well, what should I do? I was like, then I woke up. And for days I was plagued with this, I guess, depression or big question. Like, well, what is the purpose of this whole thing? Why am I here? What should I do with my life? If nothing that society and parents and school is telling me to do will ultimately satisfy me, shoot, the heck should I do? So I went off to college. I was in the pipeline or whatever they call it. And during that time, I did a lot of exploring, in my consciousness. And through circumstances, I came across a book called Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And in his description of one of his psilocybin trips, he talked about a similar experience where he saw his identities that he was currently involved in as being is dissolving in front of him, like his professorship dissolves, and then his cosmopolitan lifestyle dissolves, and him as a lover dissolves, and him as an artist dissolves, and everything he thought he was dissolves while he's on the psilocybin experience. And then his hands disappear, and his body disappears, and all this, and everything he thought was him is gone, but there's still some awareness there. And he becomes very curious about what is that. And I had, it was very similar to my experience, wondering, well, there is something else besides what our consciousness, our brains, our hearts are telling us. And what is this? Well, what could this something else be? So I was immediately taken in by the writings of the book, and I just started to meditate. I became a vegetarian on the spot. I thought that this was some tradition that had died a long time ago or it was gone with the 60s, but it spoke to me in some way. In fact, it was the first time I felt some sense of being whole. And so I became what I call myself, I went on a spiritual journey. I just started reading all these books. I brought the ideas to one of my professors who said, read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki. And I found that the Zen meditation approach seemed to call to me, just sitting very still, focusing on your breath.
Yeah, wow, that's very admirable. And I like the story, your original story about like your dream is just so profound, because I feel like so many people like don't have such a specific thing they can point to when they're like thinking about like what made them begin their journey in like spirituality and whatever. So I don't know. That's really lovely. But I want to talk more about like, so I believe it was Joe, one of the residents there. Joe's fantastic. Joe's great. They made some delicious like muffins last Sunday when I was there. But in one of the Young Zen sessions, they said that like the Zen Center itself doesn't actually teach Buddhism. And I wanted to like a little bit of elaboration on that and like kind of what the differentiation between like Buddhism and like Zen practice is.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a big, big, that could be a whole thesis. The founder, Sung San, he actually said he doesn't teach Zen. He doesn't teach Buddhism. He teaches don't know mind. Because you can get attached to your ideas about what is Buddhism and what are you supposed to be doing? Or you can get attached to this idea that you're going to become an inner peace, or you're going to, you know, become enlightened. Those are very, very loaded words that have so much baggage. They can be beautiful words and they can be inspiring words, but what they actually mean can kind of sometimes be a barrier to realizing your true self. So in Buddhism is a long history of a religion that has, you know, many, many forms. Oh, Bodhidharma, you know, what is the great, holy, and ultimate truth? And Bodhidharma said, it is emptiness itself. There is nothing holy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If a personal emptiness is something that you're struggling with, BetterHelp might be a good option for you. These days, it's hard to prioritize yourself and your mental health. I know personally that we're all dealing with a lot of burnout and a lot of stress. There's so much going on in the world that it's easy to push your needs to the side. But it's also really hard to tackle these problems if you aren't taking care of yourself. BetterHelp is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is designed to be convenient. It's fully online and can fit any schedule. I've never been in therapy, but I know that if I was, I would be a lot better suited to tackle the problems in my life as they come up. My friends who are in therapy say it's helped them learn how to set better boundaries, how to mediate conflict, and how to deal with feelings when they just get too big. Therapy can help provide you with the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. If you're thinking of starting therapy, try BetterHelp. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/dharma today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dharma.
And Emperor Wu was concerned, you know, because he had built all these temples for the Buddhists, and he was very friendly and supportive of Buddhism. And he asked him, you know, how much merit have I earned from building all these wonderful things? And he said, none at all. So this kind of confused Emperor Wu very much. He got kind of mad. So, well, then who are you standing in front of me? Bodhidharma is reputed to say, I don't know. And that was the first don't know teaching. And so he goes off to this cave, and then Hui Kao eventually finds out about him, and he's out in the snow and says, please let me in. I wanna learn from you. And Bodhidharma says, no, get out of here. You're not sincere enough. So the guy's waiting in the snow, freezing, coming back day after day. No, please teach me. Bodhidharma says, no, get out of here. So finally the story goes, Hui Kao cuts off his arm and says, is this sincere enough for you? And Bodhidharma says, yeah, okay, that's pretty good. Come on in. What do you want to know? And Hui Kao says, well, my mind is going all the time. I don't know how to pacify my mind. And Bodhidharma says, oh, okay, well, give me your mind and I'll pacify it for you. Hui Kao says, well, every time I search for my mind, I cannot find it. Bodhidharma says, there, it is pacified. And that was kind of the first teaching. So this not teaching Buddhism kind of means cut to the chase and realize and actualize your true self in this lifetime. You know, in the Buddhist canon or literature, there's the idea of reincarnation, that each lifetime, you know, there's the hierarchy of reincarnation. Like if you do good deeds in this life, you get born back as a human and you can keep practicing and eventually enter nirvana, a state where you don't keep coming back to the wheel of life and death. If you screw up bad, you come back as a slug or something and you work your way up. But Zen said, you know, that's all well and dandy. There's no good or bad about that. But Zen believes that through the practice of meditation, you can actualize your Buddha nature within this lifetime. And because it's always with us at all times, we're just in our own way. So I guess what Joe was alluding to is Zen is kind of a direct approach. Boom, become Buddha and realize your true self and save all sentient beings. So it's gotcha. It's about an experience and it's about a practice versus a doctrine or a belief.
You know, right. That makes sense.
Kind of what he's alluding to. Yeah.
Yeah. I just found that so interesting. I was like, huh? Cause I feel like people do get so caught up in like labels being like, I'm a Buddhist and like, therefore I'm going to become enlightened. And it's like, well, it's like, you can't just prescribe yourself an identity and then be that thing. And, you know,
yeah, exactly. That's what happened. That's why. And the teachings make a lot of sense from a point of view of a lot of meditation. And then you kind of see why they evolved and came, but it's a very inside out approach. It's difficult to just read some doctrine and then all of a sudden, you know, it's very, I think I was taught, one teacher explained in the continuum of religions, you have belief religion and then you have experience religion. So Buddhism or Zen is an experience religion versus a belief.
Okay, wait, this is a perfect time to practice some of that experience religion. I'm guessing that a lot of the reason you came here today is because you're looking for like a little bit of meditation or a jumping off place. Every week on the show, I'm going to provide that for you. We're going to do a short meditation together. One of the mantras that I learned during my first sit at the Cambridge Zen Center was really simple. We're going to breathe in for 3 and breathe out for 5. While we breathe in, we're going to repeat clear mind, clear mind, clear mind. While we breathe out, we're going to repeat don't know, don't know, don't know, coming back to that idea of don't know mind that John talks about. Repeating this while we breathe is a really good way to focus your attention on your breathing. An important aspect of meditation is a detachment from your thoughts, which is really hard to do. But by focusing on a little phrase like the clear mind, don't know mantra, we're able to focus on breathing and not focus on anything else. When we sit, we usually do this mantra for 10 minutes. And to be honest, I totally do sometimes get distracted during it. But when I notice myself getting lost in their thoughts, I have like a base to come back to. It's super helpful. Okay, so I want you to sit down and cross your legs so that both knees are touching the ground. This is important so that you feel stable during your sit. If you have it, grab a little pillow to sit on. Place your right hand over your left and touch your thumbs together, making an O. You can close your eyes or leave them open, but keep them relaxed and unfocused. Ready? Let's do it. Clear mind, clear mind, clear mind. Don't know, don't know, don't know. Okay, let's get back to John. I wanted to talk specifically about kind of like the role of like young people and why you like, cause I mean, I, like you said, you like became interested when you were like 19. And I also like, I mean, I literally had like no interest as a kid, but now that I'm like in my early 20s, I'm like, okay, like, I think this is like something that I want to pursue. And I kind of want to just ask, like, what is it, do you think, about like kind of like meditation and like the Zen practice in general that like draws young people to it specifically?
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder what draw you to it. From my experience, I think that this world is very busy, and these things make things even more busy.
For real.
We can distract ourselves. And the great analogy is it's like looking at the world through your own viewpoints and your own ideas and your own opinions. It's kind of looking through the world of a glass of mud, and you just get murky, 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 pulled in so many different directions. You feel an existential angst. It's just, and when you just put that glass of mud down and stop shaking it up, or take your mind or your consciousness and just put it down, all the mud settles to the bottom and you can see clearly. And the mud doesn't go away. It's just not in your way. And so then I think for young people, at least the one, because many young people come here and practice with us, and I think they find a great satisfaction. And so many people come to a retreat. After the retreat, they're like, I want to move in. I'm like, whoa, hey, it's a big commitment and a lot of steps here. But I think that's the first time they just let all that mud settle down. And the only way to let it settle down is to actually physically sit very quietly for a long period of time and watch your mind and realize that I used to have a coffee cup around here. It's not around, but it says, you know, don't believe everything you think and don't believe everything you feel. That's part of life, but there's something else going on. There's a root to all this. There's an anchor to all this that certainly gets thrown around. I mean, the current climate socially is to make people dissatisfied, because the economy runs on dissatisfaction. If you're dissatisfied, you're going to try to solve your problems by buying things. And that's how things work in one way, shape, or form. And when you're young and you're bombarded by, how am I going to make my life? How am I going to do this? It can be very, very, very overwhelming, very confusing. And then if you make some extra karma, like having a kid or getting in a relationship or whatever it might be, I think all young people, if they're healthy, do have a deep question. And Zen I think it calls to people saying, hey, listen, I'm not going to solve your question, but I'm going to make you very comfortable with not having to solve it.
Right.
And that's a lot about the sitting. So it's really about doing it. Chanting, sitting, bowing, practicing in this form helps all that mud settle down. You can see how your mind works. You can see how your heart works. And it's not, the mind is not bad and the heart is not bad. We just tend to become attached to it. And when you sit for a period of time, even for a short period of time, you can get a glimpse of kind of how that mechanism is playing out. And you can kind of create a pause in your life. Like, well, I don't want to be pulled and pushed around. I kind of want to have some agency here. And then you get deeper question, well, what is that thing that has agency? What is the thing that thinks? What is this thing that breathes? Don't know. And then in your forced, in your, if you say, I don't know on a test, you get an F. You say, I don't know here, you get an A. And it helps you be comfortable with that not knowing. And then possibilities will appear when we get out of our own way. Really interesting possibilities and beauties happen. I mean, it tends to be overwhelming, but Zen can help it all just
Yeah. I found that already. I hate to cut this off because I honestly have like so many more questions that I could ask, but I gotta run. But I appreciate your time so much. Thank you so much for being part of this podcast.
Thanks for listening to me. I hope it's helpful. And if you're here, I'm always here. So come on by.
Well, I'm gonna try to come to the Friendsgiving tomorrow, but we'll see.
Yeah. You guys are busy, so whatever works. But thanks for spending the time.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Dharma Bumps was written and produced by Chayla Wetzel, with special thanks to John Colway and the Cambridge Zen Center, and to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.